Good morning. Spring up and spring back. Beautiful time of the year to watch nature prepares for the next uptick in seasons. However, we wish to welcome everyone this morning to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. And the purpose for our being here is to spread broadcast the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. If this is your first visit, we recommend that you pick up one of these wonderful little pamphlets, which explains everything practically to get you interested. As you see, we opened this morning by 10:30, and we began promptly at 11 a.m., and we'll be done by noon. Today, being April the 2nd, the topic will be the Diamond Soul in the Iron Age. And next Sunday, the Lotus and Tree. Few words that say a great deal. Now, on Wednesday nights, the doors here open at 5:15 so that you can spend at least the next 2 hours in the wonderful library in the front of the building. The library has ordinary reference books, plus other literature in reference to the philosophy of Theosophy. In the middle room you just passed, you see a lot of books. That's the book table, and there are volunteers always running these various locations. And there you may buy straight-line theosophical literature and ask questions concerning the whole system here on Walnut Street. Wednesday night study classes run from 7:30 to 8:30, and we're working in that wonderful little book, The Key to Theosophy, The Key to Theosophy, by H.P. Blavatsky. Everyone is welcome. Students and visitors alike. We covered mostly at the essentials of scheduling, but we would like to read for you the Declaration. Of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy. Without professing attachment to any Theosophical organization, it is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part inside issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim and purpose and teaching. Therefore, has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis, and it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards, as Theosophists, all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, of creed, or sex, condition, or organization, and it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true Theosophists belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Being in sympathy with the purposes of this lodge, as set forth in the declaration, I hereby recorded my desire to be enrolled as an associate, it being understood that such association calls for no obligation on my part other than that which I myself determine. Thank you. As we stated, the topic for this morning, the diamond soul in the Iron Age. We have a little reading for you. This is taken from that wonderful little book called the Bhagavad Gita. It's an excerpt. Seek this wisdom by doing service, by strong search, by questions, and by humility. The wise who see the truth will communicate it unto thee, and knowing which thou shalt never again fall into error, O son of Bharata. By this knowledge thou shalt see all things and creatures whatsoever in thyself and in me. Even if thou wert the greatest of all sinners, thou shalt be able to cross over all sins in the bark of spiritual knowledge. As a natural fire, O Arjuna, reduces fuel to ashes, so does the fire of knowledge reduce all action to ashes. There is no purifier in this world to be compared to spiritual knowledge. And he who is perfected in devotion findeth spiritual knowledge springing up spontaneously in himself in the progress of time. The man who restraineth the senses and organs and hath faith obtaineth spiritual knowledge. And having obtained it, he soon reaches supreme tranquility. But the ignorant, those full of doubt, and without faith, are lost.
Thank you. To begin the talk today, let's first consider the framework for the entire month. Our month's theme is nature's symbols of human evolution. The three fundamental propositions upon which the philosophy rests are deity, law, and evolution. It is proposed that all of manifested life arises within one deific essence, the Absolute, and therefore impressed within the eternal aspect of all sentient beings is the truth of things. Life or consciousness moves in and through the human kingdom with the potential for self-consciousness realized. And through independent, individualized efforts, the self-conscious perceiver evolves and impresses all degrees of substance. In pre-literate or prehistorical eras, the knowledge of the basic truths bubbled up from this eternal within among those seeking answers to the great questions of life. Human life hasn't changed much since those pre-literate times. But in the absence of a written language, the ideas were expressed in symbol, in glyph, in legends, and oral histories. It was the environment of the natural world that provided symbols with which to express the human's yearning to be free from conditioned existence, from the internal war, if you will, of materialism versus spiritualism. These symbols that were used transcend time and place, enduring until today in the arts, in architecture, poetry, scripture, myths, legends, and in sacred places or spaces, these symbols remain a potent source for the use of analogy and correspondences. Resident in symbols are the tools for anyone, for all of us, seeking direct cognition of the nature of life and the methods with which to serve one and all. We note that the wisdom of the ancient sages, divided by space and time, and certainly by seas and oceans and mountain ranges, that wisdom demonstrates evidence of a common body of spiritual knowledge within the eternal core of each and all. And theosophy is a portion of that. If you check our little periodical guide for this month, you will see that we are studying symbols, and you will also note that as the weeks go on, we're looking at different kingdoms in the natural world. Today we start with the minerals. We will progress through vegetable, animal, and human kingdoms. And as always, the ideas that you bring to the room for the consideration is a really great assistance to all of us. So let's turn for today's title, The Diamond Soul in the Iron Age. Well, if we look at the symbolism generated by the term diamond soul, and each of us stops to think for a little bit, there'll be all sorts of images that rush into our minds with the use of the word diamond. The diamond has come to have a very romantic and certainly a very marketable value since the 1950s in the United States. Some would even say that diamonds connote a blood price of a certain kind. And that is not because diamonds are rare in nature. Think back to what we learned in school. The diamond is actually found with some effort on the part of human beings around the globe. It is produced by eons of physical transformations, isn't it? In the beginning, there are remains of organic substance that gradually across time are compressed and heated until a form of carbon we call coal is created. Ultimately, however, as that process of compression on that cohesive force that continues on and on and on, the rock that comes about has a potential for tremendous crystalline beauty. Cracking open the cohesive mineral formation, we find that the heat and pressure has produced an incredibly hard substance that is not readily cut or destroyed. And it is only with artistic and scientific precision that a gemologist can carve the mineral into a reflective reality sparkling in the sunlight. After eons of pressure and becoming, one false move of the mindful practitioner can cause the gem to split along so-called false fissures, and the refraction possibilities are destroyed. In that process of becoming, the transition from one form of matter to another, the diamond is a perfect symbol of the pilgrim's progress of soul evolution. And yet our fully stated symbol for today is the diamond soul, not just the diamond. In the pages of H.P. Blavatsky's Voice of the Silence, we find allusions to the term diamond soul. On page 28, you can read, quote, "The seeds of wisdom can outsprout and grow in airless space. To live and reap experience, the mind needs breadth and depth and points to draw it towards the diamond soul. Seek not those points in Maya's realm, but soar beyond illusions. Search the eternal and changeless Sat, mistrusting fancy's false suggestions." So in this reading, we immediately think about breadth and depth and points, the same way a gemologist would think. But we see in the footnote in the voice that the diamond soul, as a symbol, is actually Vajrasattva, a title of the Supreme Buddha, the Lord of all mysteries, called Vajradhara and Adi Buddha. Sat, in another footnote, is noted to be the one eternal and absolute reality and truth, all the rest being illusion. There's a second reference to the diamond soul in the voice on page 66, and it reads this way. Make hard thy soul against the snares of self. Deserve for it the name of diamond soul. That is Vajradhara presiding over the Dhyani Buddhists. For as the diamond buried deep within the throbbing heart of the earth can never mirror back the earthly delights, so are thy mind and soul. Plunged Dhyana Marga, these must mirror naught of Maya's realm elusive. And so now we have another consideration of soul. Of soul becoming one-pointed, of soul being rock-hard, solid, strong, eternal, and of soul as function either buried deep within the earthly reality or released and mirroring the spiritual, the heavenly. B.P. Wadia also wrote of this in the studies in the Voice of the Silence. And he has a different bend to it, but it's something that would be very helpful for us in modern times. The ordinary man has for his horizon his street. His insight is surface deep, and the points of his magnetic compass draw him to his appetites. He lives in his sense-created state, which looks to him like the real world, but which is not any of the seven worlds of eternal rest. His mind made subservient to his senses, and his senses to his appetites, he goes from death to death. The man who has begun to live, that soul who's pursuing the path of the diamond soul, if you will, that one recognizes that life being probationary, afflictions are opportunities, looks beyond his street. Modern education does give him some breadth of vision, but not the depth, and therefore the gap between his knowledge and his practice, between his mental and his moral life, between his sacred beliefs and his secular deeds. Theosophy educates the human mind to gain depth, to see below the surface, to penetrate into the very kernel of form. When the horizon of the student is broadened, when the insight of the practitioner has deepened, and therefore he has begun to live, he must secure the magnetic compass of the higher life to show him the way to sat, to truth. And the reading goes on about brushing away the dust that settles on mind, that clouds the heart, that comes from living in an earthly mired life. And the reading also continues on with the divine idea that we can, by practice, as mind, as soul, polish the mind. And all of these images, breadth, depth, polishing, again, harken back to the symbol of the diamond. And so from that lowly mineral comes a symbol of the potentiality, the potency of the pilgrim's spiritual journey, and suggestions for how to hone the human experience, not for just one, but for the good of all. And it also points to how each of us as human soul, as radiance of that absolute reflected in and through the human kingdom, can work to produce the diamond soul. But that's not our only symbol. Our next symbol is actually also still in the mineral kingdom. Earlier this week, there was a statement on Facebook that came from Chicago, and the statement for the day was, "It's hard to be a diamond in a rhinestone world." And it really kind of chuckled me in many ways, because it too is very symbolic of diamonds. But our consideration for this morning is a different rendition. Our symbol of the world, our symbol of the times in which we live, is iron, or the Iron Age, not rhinestones. Iron is a chemical element. It's got an atomic number that's very low, 26. It's a metal in the first level of transition of the periodic table. But what is mind-boggling is that it is the most common element on the face of the earth. It forms much of the earth's outer and inner core. We get used to seeing iron formations in nature because the rock formations are reddish, if you will. It's a mineral also that is naturally present in many foods, and it is often a supplement to build blood. Iron in nature is silver gray underground, but once it interacts with air and water, it oxidizes or rusts. It begins a transformation, and that's when you see the red appearing. Science stipulates that its abundance in rocky planets like the Earth is due to a process of fusion in high-mass stars, where iron is the last element to be released by way of the energy of the collapse of supernova, and therefore iron is found in most, if not all, meteorites. So this rock that we're so commonly aware of has an origin, if you will, in the stars. It too has a transformation or a transition. Historians and archaeologists assert that humans first discovered iron about 5,000 before the Common Era. And there's a specific prehistoric period in the development of civilization in which iron was first smithed, that is, heated, melted, hammered, formed into an object or a tool, and used for technology in farming, often as a plow, and certainly in warfare. And that kind of use and transformation occurred, according to the archaeologists, about 3,000 before the Common Era. Theosophically, however, we have a different viewpoint of the Iron Age, quite distinct from this historical allusion, which in itself has certain symbolic uses for us. From Blavatsky's Theosophical Glossary, we learn that the correct term for the Iron Age is something else, and that is the Kali Yuga. In Sanskrit, Kali Yuga is the fourth or the Black or Iron Age, our present time period, the totality of which would be 432,000 years. This is the last of the ages into which the evolutionary period of man is divided by a series of such ages. The Iron Age, or Kali Yuga, or Dark Age, began about 3,100 years before the Common Era, at the birth of at the moment of Krishna's death. And the first 5,000 year cycle of this Iron Age ended between the years 1897 and 1898. And again, we can see tremendous impact with the dates and the timing. Just as there are stages of development in the life of any human, there are stages of development in the life of the collective. And now the mineral iron takes on new symbolism. Common to all continents, available to be shaped by fire and hammering, iron is a coveted tool with which early humans could work with their external environment. But what comes to our mind? Heat, flame, smoke, soot, heat, pressure, and ultimately the weapons with which to explore the lusts for power and control. And probably the Tigris-Euphrates River Valley, Iraq, Iran, Syria would be the area we would think about historically. The Iron Age is far from a golden age, or even from Facebook's rhinestone world. And Judge, writing in The Ocean of Theosophy, has something to say about the history of each nature or how each culture cycles. He wrote, "We cut these numerous windings in our destinies daily with our own hands while we imagine that we are pursuing a track on the royal high road of respectability and duty, and then complain of those ways being so intricate and so dark. We stand bewildered before the mystery of our own making and the riddles of life that we will not solve, and then accuse the great Sphinx of devouring us. But verily, there is not an accident in our lives, not a misshapen day or a misfortune, that could not be traced back to our own doings in this or another life. Knowledge of karma gives the conviction of all that." The Western Aryans had, every nation and tribe, like their Eastern brethren of the fifth race, their golden and their iron ages. Their period of comparative irresponsibility, the Iron Age, or the Satya Age of purity, the Golden Age. While now, several of them have reached their Iron Age, the Kali Yuga, an age black with horrors. This state will last until we begin acting from within, instead of ever following impulses from without. Until then, the only palliative to the evils of life is union and harmony, a brotherhood in actuality, and altruism, not simply in name. And so here we are, the potential diamond soul in the Iron Age. So in the age of the Kali Yuga, we're aware that there's a pressure cooker effect of life, if you will. It is said that as conditions grow more and more material, as desire rises to the fore, and desire and psychism above and beyond mind powers, there's still tremendous opportunity for growth. Karma may appear to be coming at each perceiver more rapidly than ever. And for those seeking the truth, this Iron Age is just the symbol needed for growth, and it is just the moment needed for the student of the philosophy to explore science, comparative religions, in the process of becoming. What was it that produced the diamond, that produced iron? From the forms known for cohesion under stress, both of those forms, come symbols of what it would take for each of us to look within, to realize under life stress that thou art Buddha is a fact in nature. That we can personify, if not symbolize, the all in each mundane moment of transformation. No matter how dark the world may seem, no matter how glitzy the world may appear, the natural way is the prehistoric way, to look within, to seek, and to grow with caution, to look at the conditions of our environment and find the symbols that we need to follow the path. So it is for each and all to hone that is with what is within, with the pressures and the heat available, the goal to be held ever becoming the diamond soul. We're both the raw material and the gemologist. So here we are together. I'm sure you came this morning with thoughts of your own on the subject matter. Yes, I figured it would be you.
Well, if you were pondering what was said about the iron in the Dark Age, the Kali Yuga, iron under heat becomes molten.
Yes.
And all the impurities in that iron mm-hmm. come to the surface. So isn't that like the Kali Yuga? In this Iron Age, aren't all our impurities of our material nature coming to the surface? It may seem a horrible age, but it's our opportunity to remove them and get to the mm-hmm. steel or the refined metal.
Well said. The process of smelting iron is you have to have enough fire, enough heat to take the rock and reduce it to molten liquid mineral, I guess almost I imagine sort of like a lava state, and it does bubble, 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 toil and trouble, Shakespeare said. The impurities do rise up, and that pig iron, what rises up, is skimmed off the top and used for something else. That entire process, if we imagine ourselves as raw material, soul, with all potentiality of soul, in a cauldron, literally, of the skandhas and the desires and the heat and pressures of all the substance, degrees of substance we use, life in the Iron Age applies pressure, applies heat, and gradually what will happen is the weaknesses, the debris of past living, will rise or bubble to the surface. If we're mindful, we can not be judgmental and downcast, but rather just mindful. Ah, look at that trait, out of my pot. And we continue that process of character development until finally the strength is left behind that can be used for a different matter. Yes?
You spoke about coincidences.
Real, real loud.
You spoke about coincidences along with these ages. For example, you said the death of Krishna, and you also mentioned that we are in this age now of, what is it now? It's
the Kali Yuga, it's the Dark Age or Iron Age.
The Iron Age. So what determines this age? Is it a spiritual event? What is it that determines this?
That's
because you mentioned the coincidence. So is it the human growth of spirit that perpetuates and moves forward these different ages, or is it cosmic or universal? What is it?
Good question. When we think about these tremendous cycles of time, huge periods of time, and we're thinking about what's called in the philosophy rounds and races, that is a huge topic, and you're certainly invited to come into the reference library. There's a great article or two in The Ocean of Theosophy that talks about it. But in essence, what is stated is that as the absolute begins to generate or reflect or radiate the conditions of the manifested on a cosmic level, that entire becoming, if you will, moves in cycles, moves in periods of age, and that concept applies to the cosmos, it applies to the human being, it applies to the planet on which we live.
So it's not predetermined.
It's not predetermined, but not there's no external personal God that starts this whole thing,
right.
But rather it's a natural evolution. And if there's any aspect of predetermination, it is that thinking man, soul moving in the human kingdom, has mind powers and is a dynamo of energy that creates karma, that sets these cycles in motion, that faces the results of past experience, and this whole thing then continues to proceed. Another great study, and again, we can't go into it this morning, but there are different ages of man, starting with the golden or pure age that's closest to a spiritual state, and that gradually across time, each cycle, each rendering of life on the planet becomes denser and denser and denser. There's more cause and effect. If we have lived at least once every 1,500 years, if not far more, then imagine all the causes we've set up and all of that turmoil and result, and all of that builds and builds and builds until we're in the Kali Yuga, a transitional state from which all of humankind, great nature, etc., will then begin to cycle back toward the source again. Yeah.
It was mentioned in the talk how these symbols have survived even to today, and we're reminded of one expression, a diamond in the rough. But also, a number of years ago, a writer writing about Philadelphia wrote a very popular book called Acres of Diamonds, referring to how even in unsuspected places where the environment and opportunities may not be obvious, there's still that potential for the diamond part of their nature to shine forth. And we think that's also part of that symbol of the diamond soul.
Yeah.
We cannot judge people on the surface, but we have to look deep within their nature to pull out and to see that diamond potential.
Absolutely. And if we're trying to look within ourselves, if the statement, "Thou art Buddha," if that is to be considered true, it's not a unique statement. It's a universal statement. So again, in Acres of Diamonds, no matter where we find ourselves in the conditions of life, we are surrounded by other souls who also are Buddha within. There's that oneness. And the task at hand is to look beyond superficial or surface differences, maybe the flaws in the way the diamond was polished for this incarnation, but to look within and find the commonality and play to that, play to the higher. So for someone involved with a lot of teenagers, with a lot of the brouhaha that can go on in that turbulent emotional time period, the wise adult looks behind the anger or the despondency or whatever the strong emotion of the day is and talks to the inner. The same way we would ask, frankly, for the same kindness from others around us. Yes.
So the Kali Yuga, the Iron Age, things move supposedly with great, well, they do move with great rapidity, supposedly four times as fast as
yeah, March is already gone. This is
right.
April.
It's amazing, isn't it? So how are we to prepare ourselves for it? It seems like the times keep speeding up. I mean, it seems that way to me, anyway. How do we prepare ourselves for these great changes which lie ahead?
You know, there's a terrible anecdote about time appearing to speed up, that water, when flushed, begins to circle and it goes down really fast. Well, as we age physically, time is appearing to speed up because so much of it has been spent already and there's so little ahead of us. Well, you know, we could get up in the morning and live life as though we were in a pinball machine, couldn't we? We could get up, caught up in the world of rhinestones and all that glitters, and focus outward and do what Wadia said. Our horizon is the street. We're linear. We're going from here to there. all these duties are coming at us. We've got radio, TV, internet going with the news of the day, the news of the world. We could lead life like that, bounce randomly from event to event to event, and then mindlessly exhausted go to sleep at night. Or we could say, wait a second, if we are in the cauldron of the iron, or we are in this subterranean pressures of the deep earth, and all this stuff is coming at us, because we are soul in the human kingdom, we can do far more than just be cohesive like the minerals. We can sit quietly and practice metacognition or meditation or self-reflection, however you want to call that. And we can start out the morning with some inspirational book. If we're readers, if we like to listen to something, we could listen to some fine music. If we are more kinesthetic and we need to move, we could do something else that involves motion. But to have a focal point where we're considering how are we going to attempt to face the pressures of life that day. And for many religious people, every time there's a meal, there's a period of concentration and or prayer and meditation that precedes the meal. For other religious people, there are times set aside by a voice calling to prayer or bells chiming for the Angelus. There are periods during the day which are set up specifically for people to take a break, recenter, and again think about the spiritual. Most times people are invited at the end of the day to sit quietly, think back at the day, the events of the day, consider how life's forces were used and emotionally what happened and why did it happen and how to do better. So depending on the bodies we're using and the brains we're using, there's probably a very methodical way to spend the day to pull back from all those pressures and the speed and the rapidity of things coming at us, to center, to look within for a bit, to make a new start to holding a resolve, and then move through. That mindful living is very peaceful, very, very peaceful, and very enlightening. It's part of the process of human evolution. Your hand went up and down real fast.
It did. But that's all it was.
That's all it was?
That's all it was. Thank you.
Moved right past us. Yes, sir.
Okay, so I want to try to tie something together here. We're talking about symbols. We're talking about this Kali Yuga and the Iron Age. Now, there's like a negative connotation with this age. Now, is it that we've lost the symbolic understanding? Is that what this is happening? Is that what's happening in this age? What is it that's a disadvantage of living in this transitional age? Is that what the problem is here? These symbols?
Well, the symbols are eternal mind and spirit is. That's changeless. The problem, if you want to define it that way, is that because of all the incarnation we have done as individual soul and as members of a collective, there's a myriad of causes and forces. Life is very, very materialistic. It's very dense. Many of us have forgotten that we are soul in action. Some of us have been taught that we are bodies who have souls. And so that confusion of who am I, where am I, what am I doing, why am I doing this, where are we going, that confusion exists. The symbols are reminders to wake up and look at a higher truth, to remember a truth that might be veiled by current life. So actually, what is the problem is actually the greatest invitation and opportunity to grow and evolve. Because if, as the gentleman said, everything seems to be speeded up at least four times over, every little effort, every single little feeble effort that we make under these conditions to rise up and recall spirit, to wake up and look at a symbol and try to think of all the different spiritual aspects in it, every effort we make along that lines helps us evolve and impresses all of great nature and lifts the entire mass, even those other humans that may for the time being be asleep in a certain way. Yeah.
Yes. We have to develop an attitude, from what I'm hearing, is that that we aren't these bodies and that we always have to keep it's called be here now. Just be present, because that is the eternity, is in the moment. And that whole idea of consciousness is only exists in the present. It's a future of the past, but it only exists now. And so the energy that we produce in the now, like we're doing now, we're producing energy together in studying an idea or looking at something and trying to aid each other and trying to, delve more deeply into this subject. But only thing that you're doing is introducing it. I mean, it's on us for us to dwell on it and to consider it. It's all its true meaning, because our life is not out here. It's in here. Mm-hmm. And that's why you're saying by developing an attitude where you are reflective and where you are present and enjoying the moment, not looking for the result of it so that you can enjoy it more.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever, but it's the Gita talks about it, and Voice of the Silence talks about it, but being here and present in the reality for the moment is really one of the hardest concentrations to do.
It is. It takes, there's a reason why people say, I'm practicing meditation, or I practice yoga, because it's a, we all have something called the monkey mind, don't we? That lower mind, that brain, is distractible. We smell something and all of a sudden our mind is way off on some past experience or an anticipation of a new event. There's so many distractors that are based in the senses, and we can be in the middle of a huge, wonderful party or festivity, and suddenly some train of thought takes us way over in a whole nother aspect, and despondency as a result. So that practice of being meditative in the moment, of understanding that the eternal is duration, that past, present, and future are artificial terms that we kind of agree on, for business purposes, if you will, or to be able to function as a society. But in reality, that oneness of mind in the moment is truly the goal. Yeah.
And as was said in the introduction this morning, that we are to have no attachments, to organizations. We have only to principles, but not to organizations. So we have to let go of these attachments.
And it's tough. It's tough to let go because the attachments seem so real. This building, sustained by voluntary time, energy, money, efforts of students, is the heart of the activity here in Philadelphia? Or is it? Is it merely a condition, a container? Because the heart of the theosophical movement, the heart of the activity, is within each and all. Way in the back, there's two hands. Over in the corner.
We like the idea when we're speaking of the diamond soul and the Iron Age, because where the iron is also formed under pressure, with the diamond soul in the Iron Age, it is also, we're also forming and progressing and getting harder and more shiny and all under the pressure from it. So we never really thought about those symbols before until today's class, but as was just said, it's a shorter age, but we have all this pressure to help us become perfected, which is what the diamond is.
Mm-hmm.
It is perfected because of all its beauty and its toughness. So it's just kind of interesting to merge the two of them together.
And if we take the image a little bit further, and we, our physical entity is the mine shaft, if you will. The diamond is to be mined from within, is it not? And ergo, as thinkers, are we the raw material? We're the soul that's to be found within and produced without. But we're also the gemologist who works with science to figure out how best to perfect. It's a funny kind of interplay. It's while the diamond in the earth is a passive mineral state of cohesion with certain attributes, while iron is a passive cohesive state of other mineral attributes, that's not the process in the human kingdom, is it? It's not the process of the diamond soul in this Kali Yuga or Iron Age. Rather, we need to be very active and creative and forceful while we do the mining, the smelting, the carving, whatever else it is. Yeah.
It would seem then that the greatest challenge or burden that we have with all the heat of the normal day and the pressures of the burden that we carry is the dreaded word potential.
Say that aloud.
Potential.
Oh, potential. The dreaded word potential. Do you like the word potency better? You know, we conditioned experience or conditioned existence, how we contain ourselves, how we contain ourselves in vocabulary, in ideas, in intent, in goals, in self-identification, we can greatly limit potential. You can take a small child and convince them that they're just slightly above an earthworm, and for a very long time, that child may be totally crippled and handicapped by that notion of how limited they are. But potential, the possibility that this is life's cauldron and we can sustain, we can endure all these pressures and set that potential free is quite a challenge, but boy, what a promise. Yeah.
We were thinking of an analogy, and actually two, and they might work. The one is the word Lucifer, and you know, not the way Lucifer is viewed by, you know, Christianity, but there was a philosophical view of Christianity is referred to as the light bringer. And so lucid is light, and that F-E-R is like the Latin root or something for iron. Ferrar or ferrous or something. So you have iron, the carrier of light in Lucifer. Also during the talk, though, it was said that iron is important in the blood.
Yes.
And it just so happens that iron in hemoglobin is what carries oxygen to the cells. So there you have iron, the carrier, bringing oxygen to be burned for energy by the cells. So that is a light bringer in itself.
Mm-hmm.
So now the combination of the Iron Age with the diamond soul, which of course is the light, the being of light who we all are. So it could be that if we, this Iron Age is the very vehicle that we need and can use, all the challenges in it, if they're overcome, then we've accomplished what needs to be accomplished in this.
Interesting. Very interesting analogies. And if we extend the analogy with iron and the building of blood, the carrying of oxygen, and the fact that this is a circulation, we're reminded as well why our effort for the dreaded potentiality, as the previous person said, is so important for the whole. Because as mind beings, what we generate and put into the astral and invigorate with our life's blood literally circulates throughout the whole, does it not? Yeah.
One point we wanted to make also, it was said, was iron, that chemical symbol, the word is ferrous or ferric.
Yeah, it's F-E, capital F-E,
yeah,
is iron.
And so the word is ferrous, just like Lucifer, and it means carry, like a ferry carries from one side. So it's just this very interesting placement of words and implications.
Isn't that interesting?
Philosophy and science.
That if the word means to carry, and the scientific investigation says that this element was generated, carried by light when the stars exploded. Isn't that an interesting concept of life exploding and then cooling and coagulating into globes upon which human life is possible? It's interesting. Yes?
Well, one of the properties of iron is magnetism. Is that whole other aspect that iron is a conductor and the magnetic fields and how the earth is a magnet. So you know, the fact that we are so much iron on this earth is, you know, is a factor which we have to take into account why we are so magnetic.
Mm-hmm. The whole study of electromagnetics and the fact that Wadia also talked about the compass and talked about how, you know, don't be just linear with just the life on the street, but rather set your moral compass. The points of his magnetic compass show him the way to Sat or truth. So that electric magnetic field through which we work, we know that physically this is not it. The body is not it. The brain is not all that we are. But rather, there is all else of life that we generate. We have time for one more short comment, and it's yours.
We understand that the diamond cutter may spend 6 months to a year before he begins the process of cutting that diamond.
Real, real loud, please.
Before he begins cutting that diamond.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he first has to take a good look at it and concentrate on it. And then he goes away, and then he begins, he says, now I see. Then he takes his mallet and the chisel. If he misses, he has ruined the whole diamond, but he hits it, and if it cracks, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
A little polishing and a room full of light.
Mm-hmm. And there's a perfect place
and
to end for today.
It's called the flashing diamond. In
yeah.
other words, we have to understand that Diamond Cutter is a great mathematician,
mm-hmm.
in a sense. And are we not also doing the same thing by our studying? the truth of the matter.
The truth of the matter. If
yes.
we think of the diamond as a refracting device, the whole issue of the symbolism of white light passing through a particular kind of medium or mineral, producing the array of all the great colors of the rainbow, is a whole other field for thought, all coming from some lowly little minerals. Our time is up for today. Have a great week. See you Wednesday night.